You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Yi Yun Lee came to the United States in 1996 to become a scientist and earn her PhD, but after enrolling in a writing class at a community college to improve her English, she started writing fiction. And since then, she's published two critically acclaimed short story collections and two novels. Her latest is Kinder Than Solitude, and it's Ms. Lee's first as a U.S. citizen. Congratulations.
Thank you.
The novel is about three friends and their reactions to the death of a fourth friend who had been mysteriously poisoned and severely incapacitated two decades earlier. It's published by Random House, and I'm very pleased it has brought Yi Yun Lee back to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Now, this is not a typical murder mystery. You alternate chapters between places and times. You don't lay out the clues for the reader. Were you thinking of it as a mystery?
I didn't really think it as a murder mystery because first chapter you already knew, you know, someone was poisoned and she died. And to me, who did it was not as important as what happened.
But you did hold out on who done it till the very end.
Yes.
So to some degree, it still functions as a mystery.
Yes. You have to keep certain, you know, suspense.
But I guess you're making all sorts of other points here about cultures and about, Chinese history and American history.
Yeah.
It delves deep into the psychological and philosophical underpinnings of these characters' lives. And you write about that. Why is that important? Can you explain who these three characters are?
So these three characters, they were 15 and 16 back then in 1989, when the older friend, who was 22, she was poisoned. So these three friends, you know, if you imagine their life, they would have just stayed in China. In the past 20 years, Chinese economy really blossomed, and they would have had a good life there. But because of this poisoning, two of them fled to America to start anew, but, you know, couldn't start.
But they also left at a time of turmoil after Tiananmen Square.
They did, yes. That's also the political background of, you know, the long shadow of communist history in their lives.
The previous novel was told through the eyes of a number of different townspeople, and here you also have multiple third-person narrators, and you go back and forth between China and the United States. Is that important for you? I mean, you're not doing a Rashomon kind of thing here, but is it important for you to not tell the story through one person's eyes or from an omnipotent third-person narrator?
Yes. For me, it's important because there's no absolute truth, you know. Especially in this case, all three of them contributed something to the poisoning, but none of them could figure out what they did or what they did wrong. So I think for me it's important to approach this case and the past through different angles and see how each of them ends up 20 years later.
Well, the three of them, Moran, Ruyu, and Boyang, all deal with their feelings of solitude in the wake of their friend's death. Now, I'm not sure how to pronounce that name. Shao Ai,
yes.
Is her death the reason that they haven't stayed friends?
No, I think the poisoning was really the reason, or this huge thing when, you know, you have to look at their lives. This case happened when they were teenagers. And, you know, as adolescents, they did not have a lot of experience with life, but they had extreme strong emotions. And I think what they were dealing with in the past 20 years was their emotions.
Well, there's a strong sense that these characters are letting things happen to them as opposed to making things happen. And they are kind of emotionally estranged because of what happened in China, simply because their friend died under these circumstances? Or are we also seeing a generation that feels slightly separated?
Right. I think, you know, you have to look at it, you know, at different levels. At one level, you realize all three friends refused to acknowledge Tiananmen Square massacre happened in their life's history. And
Chou Ai was a protester at Tiananmen Square.
Yes. And it's interesting to me that the whole history became a negative space on their minds.
Well, Choai's father says to her at one point, "We've had enough revolutions in our lifetime." And then she responds, "Our revolution will be completely different than yours."
Well, every generation's young people say that.
Was there a bigger generation gap at that point? Because her parents would have grown up with the revolution, mm-hmm. and then these are children who grow up after the Cultural Revolution, which really changed China a lot.
I would say yes. Shaolai, you know, is among the first generation of, you know, Chinese young people who saw this glimpse of democracy in China, where the door of the country was opening to the world, and that did bring a lot of hope to the country.
Well, but earlier than that, I remember speaking to a Chinese student here going for a doctoral degree at a New York university, planning to go back and make $1 million. He said to me, after the Cultural Revolution, I was so disillusioned, I would never believe in anything other than making money. I just could not believe in that. I could not trust government anymore.
That's probably a consensus feeling, you know, among Chinese.
To this day?
Yes.
Did you, you were in the military. Were you there during Tiananmen Square?
No, I was there in 1991. It was after Tiananmen Square, you know, before I went to this college, Peking University, which was really active in Tiananmen Square protest. So we were sent to the army.
Is it true that some of the college students in the army didn't even know about Tiananmen Square?
Yeah, when I got to the army, you know, I came from Beijing. I think I was the only student coming from Beijing in my squad. And most of my squad mates were from provinces, and they did not know anything about Tiananmen Square. Or they did not know, like, people were killed.
Really? I
mean, that was the amount of, you know, propaganda versus, you know.
So newspapers just simply didn't tell the story, and unless you knew somebody, there was no way to know?
Yeah, I mean, when we were in Beijing, everybody knew someone who was killed. But the official news would say, you know, nobody was killed in Tiananmen Square.
My guest is Yiyun Li, whose latest book, her follow-up to The Vagrants, is Kinder Than Solitude. Salman Rushdie says this is an exceptional novel, and Yiyun Li has grown into one of our major novelists. Well, he grew up, Salman, speaking mostly English, although mm-hmm. also spoke Hindi, and he says that Hindi enriched his English. But in your case, you grew up only speaking Mandarin. You didn't even learn English until you came to this country? How much did you know?
We started learning English in middle school, so I could read fairly, you know, a fair amount of English when I came to this country, but I did not write. I could not write or I could not speak.
Did you write in Chinese?
I've never written in Chinese. I was a very good scientist.
And you came here when you were 24. Was there a certain amount of cultural shock when you first arrived?
A little bit. Let me see. You know, just I landed in Iowa, so the amount of cornfield around me was quite amazing.
But of course, Iowa is home to one of the most famous writing programs in America.
Yes.
What were you studying? What was the science? Your father was also a scientist.
My father was a nuclear physicist, and I was studying immunology in Iowa. It just happened, you know, it has a good writing program.
So you decided out of curiosity to go into the writing program?
Somebody told me in Iowa City, everybody is writing a novel. And if you know Iowa City, yes, everybody in town is writing a novel. So I thought, yeah, I would try that too.
And then that awakened something in you?
It sounds cheesy, but I really did fall in love with writing in English.
Now, why in English? Chinese is a... there are so many different Chineses, actually, all the different dialects, but they're all very rich. It's a rich language.
It's a rich language. You know, I have read, you know, I would say I'm very well read in Chinese, but there's something about, you know, you can't say things in your mother tongue. And I'm sure it's not the case for everyone, but for me, it's extreme case that I cannot express a lot of things in Chinese. and I find it easier to express in English.
It's usually the other way around, isn't it? Then people find it easier to express themselves in their native language.
Yes. I'm sure there's a block somewhere in my head.
On the other hand, I would think that your writing style is enriched by the fact that there's Chinese there, and I wonder whether you're even translating sometimes when you're writing an English sentence.
You know, I don't translate from Chinese to English. Interestingly, I think my characters speak to me in English.
Even when they're in China and they're speaking to each other in Chinese?
I know they speak to each other in Chinese, and I know they live their lives in Chinese, but they live in my head in English. So I think it's if you call it a translation, it's a psychological translation in my head. When I look at a situation, any situation, I translate into English.
Hmm. Has any of your writing been translated? Because there's always a political side to your writing. Has any of it ever been translated into Chinese? And do you have people back home who have read you?
That's a good question. We have offers from Chinese publishers to have, you know, several books translated into Chinese, and I choose not to, and for, you know, various reasons. And one is my parents live in Beijing still, and somehow you always want to protect your parents from your writing self. So I said no.
Because it's likely that some of it would have to be censored.
I think so. Some of them must, you know, you know, you never know what the censorship is like. And I think I actually asked Ha Jin one time when I got this offer, and he said, you know,
Ha Jin, another writer, a Chinese writer who writes in English.
Yes. And he said, before you're ready, don't go there.
So you haven't gone back?
No, he meant before you're ready, don't go there. Don't have your books translated into Chinese. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that there is a younger generation, a much more sophisticated one, that is dying to live in a situation, in a country where there isn't censorship, where they don't have to worry about something that they put on the internet being blocked.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at the younger generation, I think there is definitely progress and improvement. And, you know, I see hope.
Well, you've said that writing is the most dangerous thing that a person can do.
In so many ways, you know, politically and personally. You know, when you write, you risk being misunderstood or misread. And writing is in the end, writing is a private business. And so I always feel that it's a secretive business going public.
Well, it's obvious that it was important to you to make real people in this book, but politics is always there. Can you imagine a time when you would write something where the politics of China wouldn't be part of your concern?
That's a very good question. No, I agree with you. Politics is going to be there whenever you write about China. On the other hand, I think some characters or some people would, you know, go through life thinking of themselves as victims or products of politics. And it just happened my characters don't look at themselves that way. So politics is always on their mind, but they don't pay a lot of attention.
Yi Yun Li is the author of A Thousand Years of Good Prayers, The Vagrants, Gold Boy, Emerald Girl. She is the recipient of a MacArthur Fellowship, the Frank O'Connor International Short Story Award, the Hemingway Foundation Pen Award, the Whiting Writers Award, the Guardian First Book Award. Granta named her one of the best American novelists under 35. The New Yorker named her one of the 20 U.S. writers under 40 to watch. And her latest novel is Kinder Than Solitude. It is published by Random House. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.